This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Back of the Nest. Match Review Podcast. www.backofthenest.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Review Pod. I'm your host Mike, in due to squad rotation in place of Hambo, and I'm joined by a fine panel to discuss Palace's convincing win over Doncaster, a game which saw both teams find themselves on peak time BBC TV. I'm joined by comrade Chris Clark, Mick Gillard and Patrick O'Connor as we analyse the game and answer your questions about the performance. We'll be back after this.
Back of the Nest, Match Preview Podcast.
Hello ladies and gentlemen, Terence here from the Preview Podcast, and I just want to take up a moment of your time to say that from Wednesday this week, tune in to the Preview Podcast where we will be previewing our trip to Leicester City, and we will also be joined by a special guest, Ben Bailey-Smith, otherwise known as Doc Brown.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Okay, well, I get to host another winning pod, which is nice. A decent 2-0 win over Doncaster. I didn't ever seem in doubt, so hopefully we should give you an upbeat one today. A couple of things to mention before we start. Again, we're probably drumming this in, and sorry to bore you all, but people that have given us a nice review on iTunes and other podcast platforms have been very kind, helped things spread a lot recently, so if you're feeling charitable, please go on iTunes, give us a lovely 5-star review. The stars count, so give us 5, even if you don't think we're worth that. That would be excellent. Other than that, there's no marathon marches or anything going on right now, so we'll get straight into it. Let's talk about the atmosphere at the ground. Chris, how are you doing?
Yeah, not bad, comrade. You?
I'm good. It sounded like you weren't doing too great yesterday when you thought you might miss the start of the game.
Yeah, considering we left Croydon at 10:30 in the morning, aiming for an 11:15 train off King's Cross that was cancelled, as were the 11:53 and the 11:58, during which time we were stood on the train on Platform 5, sent round to Platform 2, then told, no, that's not running, there's not going to be anything here for hours, go over to St Pancras, you can get a train to Sheffield from there, and then actually, oh no, that won't get you until 5:30, so you'll miss the game anyway. At which point we nearly gave up. We just walked back to King's Cross, went up to a nice pub upstairs in there and watched as the screen then said that the 1:15 would run, which we ran down and got on board and got to the game just in time to have a pint before the game. So it had a happy ending, but it was a stressful time. And yeah, I mean, moving on to what you were saying before, the atmosphere, that was smoking in there. You know, I mean, you obviously saw Liam and the ultras in their ski masks. And you know that they were banging their drum all day long. You know, there were lots of us turning around and leading others in singing as well. It was really, really banging and great fun. I'm really glad I went.
Okay, Patrick, how did you think it sounded from on the TV over in America? And how are you doing after your big birthday?
Well, thank you for the birthday wishes. Appreciate it. It sounded really good. I have to say, lucky over here, we get a lot of coverage of football over here, and a channel over here called ESPN Plus covers all the FA Cup games. So every game is on TV. So it came across really, really well. They did a great job of focusing on the supporters throughout the match. And they actually gave, and I'm going to ask Chris this real quickly, they gave a couple of really great overhead views of the Keep Moat. And just looking at it, it looks like a beautiful little stadium. I want to kind of get Chris's thoughts on it. Because again, on TV, great little atmosphere, great. It really looked good on TV and the stadium was really nice. But so how is it like in person, Chris?
Much nicer than almost any Premier League ground I've been to in recent times, frankly. It generated a decent atmosphere and, you know, I mean, it just looked really nice, like a proper football stadium. It wasn't one of those kind of modern bowls. It's still out on an industrial estate in the middle of nowhere, of course, as all football grounds are nowadays, with the exception of Selhurst, perhaps. But, you know, I mean, and I have to say, I mean, the fans were pretty friendly as we were walking down. The stewards were nice in terms of directing us the right direction. It was just a really nice day out in the end.
Excellent. And Nick, have you come over your problems there? Can you? Are you able to?
The computer decided to shut off the mic in the sounds application rather than the usual mute button here. So sorry if I was chatting away again. They're not responding. They're not responding. What's going on?
You see, what you're doing here is you're sort of adding to the stereotype that the older gentleman can't use a computer very well. And I'm sure that's not the case, really, is it?
I've turned 50. It's just going to get worse, mate.
Yeah. How you been? Worse.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. It's half term, so I'm knee deep in decorating, which, you know, you always get a list for half term. But other than that, yeah, Palace are keeping me happy. It's not been a bad few weeks, has it?
Yeah, good. That's what we like to hear. So if we talk a little bit about the atmosphere at the ground, Kevin got in touch and he said if he'd known the support was going to be that vocal, he'd have made an effort to go. And how much do you think it influenced the result and the performance? That's an interesting point. I mean, first of all, I would say that the atmosphere is only going to get good if people do go. So, you know, that make sure you do go next time, Kevin. But yeah.
I've not been to a Palace game where the atmosphere's been poor away from home in a pretty long time, to be honest. So, advice, Kevin, just come along and be part of it because it is great fun away. It's, you don't have the moaners that we get at home. So, yeah, come along, be part of it.
And I like to add that clearly the atmosphere made a difference because Hodgson made a point of mentioning it post-match. So did Luca. And I've seen several players on social media, Joe Ward in particular, who mentioned the atmosphere in the crowd. So I think it's fantastic that the players and the manager notice it, and I think it does help lift the players, and it's created an atmosphere. I think it's been really great, especially considering how poor it was beginning of the year when the ultras weren't, you know, in the homes down, and it was kind of poor beginning of the year. So it's great that everybody's gotten on board and, you know, done so well in your away matches this year.
I think the downside is that there was a bit of negativity from probably people of totally outside the club, you know, saying, oh, you only get that kind of atmosphere from the drum. Well, that's entirely not true. I mean, if they'd seen more than the odd match of the day highlights of us, like Chris said, any away game this season, even defeats, Bournemouth or whatever, you know, we made more noise in the home crowd a lot of the time, with or without a drum. So that's rubbish. And I saw that FYP had gone off on one on Twitter. They got very, very triggered by that. Which you can kind of understand. So do you think that, because I was expecting, I've got to say, I was expecting the Doncaster fans, from what I'd heard, to be a bit more vocal than they were, perhaps. Do you think it made a big difference to the performance, or do you think it was just the sort of the atmosphere of the cup?
I honestly think the early goal killed what atmosphere there would have been from them. They seemed very flat after that. I mean, I didn't even seem to be particularly giving it a go before, and there were a couple of moments where they got a song going, but it was, you know, probably 20 minutes in, and we applauded them when they did. So it was just one of those classic, you know, home team, not as good. My message to, you know, the fans of other clubs who say that it's because we've got a drum is, well, get a drum then. If you really think that a drum alone is going to generate that atmosphere, actually what you need is fanatical fans who write their own songs, put effort into creating that atmosphere. I mean, you've seen it up close, you know, the work that goes in terms of whipping people into a frenzy at somewhere like the Holmesdale pub before walking down to the ground. it's teamwork, it's preparation, it's effort. That's what generates that, not just a good performance.
And I've got to say, as a musician and as somebody that's seen someone with a bad drumming technique, it's not just the drum. You've got to be damn good at playing that drum as well. So let's get on to, we put a man of the match poll up. We went for Luca, Schlupp, Dan, and who was the other one? Somebody help me out.
Max, I hope. No?
Max, yeah, of course it was. Yeah. Luca convincingly won with 60% of the vote. Dan got 3%, which I was a little bit shocked by. We'll get to him a bit later. But if we start with Luca, he got high praise from most quarters. If we go with Mr. Cadbury's Poet, you know, a fixture around these parts. Let's start with Vince Flynn. He said that Luca was magnificent yesterday, dominated the game. He certainly did. I thought he was given a lot of space, and I think when teams are a little bit slower and a little bit more standoffish this season, he has tended to dominate a little bit more. But what do you think it was about yesterday's performance that he stood out so much? You know, two-thirds of people saying he was man of the match.
I liked his passing yesterday. I've been critical of Luca's passing in the previously because I think he's kind of dropped off. But yesterday, 59 accurate passes, 88% pass success rate. Created 6 chances, 5 key passes, 96 touches. He was all over the place. He tackled. He was, again, great ball. He played to Andros for the header that created Max's goal. He was all over the place. Yeah, I think I believe he was also actually beginning at the Schlupp. Goal. He was just all over the place, and he hasn't really featured in the FA Cup, which has been fine. We're trying to, you know, rotate our squad, but I feel that he's really a key player. And again, I was concerned about his passing yesterday. He was really all over the place and played a really great overall game, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and he, as Patrick said, he bossed the midfield, but he slid in, got the ball, I think, for Schlupp's goal. Saw Van Aanholt, played it in. Got it back, but it was the fact he'd gone down and got up so quickly again to set up Schlupp for that goal. And the pass to Townsend was so exquisite, wasn't it, to make the second goal. It was just unbelievable. Really happy. Is he seems to be, well, maybe it's just this weekend, but is he making more of a media kind of thing for himself? Because I know he's now captain, but he seems to be speaking a lot more on telly and radio in the last few days.
As he should. He's a charismatic man, and that accent makes you tingle, doesn't it? If we get on to Mr. Cadbury Parrott's comment, he talked about the corners and the free kicks, which is something that we've discussed the last couple of pods. And he's asked Max or Luca on corners and free kicks, or maybe a bit of both. And I know I was saying the other week that I was a bit disappointed with some of his slow, floatier balls in. And I was hoping that maybe he could mix them up with Andros and with Max, at least maybe him taking them from only one side. But the sort of looping balls in seem to really work. I mean, I don't know to what extent, you know, 2 leagues worth of difference makes, but he seemed like a different player. You know, he wasn't like he was doing something vastly different, but it seemed like the balls were more effective. What was that? Was that different personnel in the team? I mean, Dan helped, or was it more just the fact that against the League One team, they may be less used to really quality corners?
Yeah, you took the words out of my mouth there about Dan. I think knowing you've got a presence in the box that can actually header the blooming thing probably helps with your delivery, doesn't it? You know, he's got a better target to aim for. And I love the way that Dan was hiding behind other players in the wall, or sort of in the mix in the box. To try and get things going in there. But yeah, the deliveries were a lot better because we've seen a lot fall short in recent matches, haven't we?
Well, it was kind of a mini love train, wasn't it? Like the England love train from last summer with 3 of them, you know, doing a proper three-man love train. Just a little two-man, a little bit man-on-man love. That's a bit worrying, though. If the difference is Scott Dan, he's not taller than Benteke. He's not taller... Yeah, we've got tall players, but we've got Sacco, who seems to be able to steal defeat from the jaws of victory every time the ball goes near his head. Is it that we need someone that's just a better target man? Is Tompkins taking on too much? And, you know, he's not the tallest guy in the world. I know I say that about everyone, but he's not the tallest guy in the world. So is it the fact that we do need to work on those target moves a bit more? What do you reckon, Chris?
I think what you said a short while ago is the point about mixing it up. I mean, a lot of the time, one of the big problems actually has been, for me, that Luca's corners have been a little bit like Kabay's towards the end of his time with us, where half the time they don't clear the defender who's covering. And that's incredibly frustrating when that's the case. But mixing it up, sending it to the back post, sending it to the near post, and having someone else to aim at will help. We haven't really seen the best of Batshuayi yet on that, because we haven't really tested playing, you know, frankly, giving him enough time to actually, you know, build an affinity with our wingers and with people playing the ball in from set pieces. So that's one. Wickham, obviously, definitely has potential to do that. But they need some time on the training ground to work together and work out those routines. Mixing it up, having Meyer playing some of them as well, maybe even, as you mentioned earlier, on Townsend. Those are the things. You just want to have options so that it's not incredibly predictable, because I could tell you in advance most of the time what we're going to do and how it will get cleared and who by.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. I think we've managed to go a bit depressing already, haven't we, for a 2-0 win. But we seem to be very good at that. Let's talk a little bit about the stats. I mean, when you get Premier League games, you can pore over stats for hours and hours and hours. The FA Cup games, there's less of these stat sites giving you info, but I think the basic stats sort of speak a fair amount of volumes. Interestingly, Doncaster had more shots, 19 against 12. More on target, they had 5, we had 4. Nearly as many passes, we had 4-9-1, they had 4-3-6. Possession was pretty much equal, 53 for us. And they had an absolute ton of corners. So in a way, you could say that it set pieces probably should have dominated the game a little bit more. It's surprising that out of 18 corners, there was only 2 goals in the game, really.
Well, it was quite an even game, has to be said, actually. And considering that we were playing lower league opposition and that, you know, we're supposed to be an established Premier League team, you know, you might look at that and think, well, you only beat them 2-0. On the other hand, you know, I have to say, I didn't feel that there was much doubt about the outcome of that game, certainly from the moment that Jeffrey Schlupp's goal had gone in, and probably before that either. I just felt comfortable throughout, with the exception of being whenever the ball came anywhere near Wayne Hennessy, where there is, of course, that crunch in your belly every time anyone passes the ball back or anything. But I thought we looked solid. And that really was the difference, was, you know, we were organised. We knew what we were doing. Yes, they had more possession, but that was our game plan. We're the away team. And, you know, yeah, you can try and play your way around a team Man City style, or you can organise and do it, you know, the kind of Pulis way. And this was a bit more like that. Might be against lower league opposition, but at the end of the day, it worked and we're through to the next round. And I'm happy with that.
It's got to be remembered that Doncaster are a pretty good team, and I actually enjoyed watching them play yesterday. To think they're League One level. They weren't afraid of us. They didn't change their game at all. All right, we didn't really have to get out of gear too much, but we did well to win it. It could have gone the other way, but with regards to the stats, half the corners, I thought that our defence had had a sort of a bet on how many of the corners there'd be in the first and second half, because it was just useless the way we, under just that tiny, tiny bit of pressure, that they were, you know, making silly errors.
I'd like to add that with the stats. I have to admit, Mike, and I have those same stats in front of me, that I'm surprised we had more possession, because the way that the game kind of looked on TV, it looked to me as that Doncaster really did dominate possession. So I want to go to how we're playing now. I've noticed that whether home or away, we are definitely ceding more possession to the other side in order for us to kind of play the way we want to play. We're a counter-attacking team. Funny, we only had one counter-attack yesterday, the goal that led the goal of Schlupp scored. They had no counter-attacks. And I think that I have to give Hodgson credit. I think allowing other teams to kind of get on us and then relying on the way we play better, which is, again, more counter-attacking style. You can have the possession, we'll create chances off of that when we can and score. I think we're actually playing better. I was very frustrated at the beginning of the year, dominating possession against certain sides and not scoring and or not winning. And I think that, again, over the last, I would say, 4 or 5 matches, whether home or away, we've definitely changed our style. I think it's definitely changed for the better.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I've always, probably since the Pulis era, I've always been a bit dubious if we have more than about 30% possession, because it seems to me that we're more likely to lose. But it sort of brings us on to, you know, there was some decent criticism, you know, not massive criticism, but people saying, you know, the second half was a bit limp. You know, we let them have the ball a bit too much. But it didn't seem to me as though it ever particularly seems, apart from a period of about 5 minutes where they were going to get one back. I think one of the reasons that they did end up with less than half possession, because like you say, it seemed like they had more, was they seemed to get very jumpy, you know, and shoot from outrageous distances and end moves earlier than perhaps they should have done. And we ended up with the ball a fair amount in sort of between back of midfield and defence, sort of passing the ball around to knacker them out. So I thought it was fairly decent game management, really. You're already 2-0 up by half time. There's no real need to go pushing for that third, fourth. It never looked like it was going to be in any doubt whatsoever. So although we had less shots, but how many of them really looked like they were going to go in from them? You know, there was a few into Hennessy's hands, not a great deal of anything else. So I think if they'd wanted to sort of push it up another gear, we probably would have ended up dominating the second half as well. But no need to be knackering players out and making unnecessary mistakes and that kind of thing. So I just thought it was a little bit unfair to expect that they could keep the kind of pace that they had in the first half up in the second. What did you think about that, Nick?
It's it was just really, really comfortable, wasn't it? I don't think you'd play the ball around that deep, hoping to get a counter attack. Perhaps if they're giving the ball away in that little gap that you talked about, you wouldn't do that against Chelsea, would you? So it's a little bit worrying. And the other thing was we didn't have Sacco in there to make his one or two errors in a game. But we gave the ball away a few times, which could have led to problems if it was a better team. We were a bit too cocksure, I thought.
And to add to that about just playing and possessing the ball, is anyone else concerned about it? It seemed to me as if it was like our game plan, whenever Kelly or Dan had the ball, was to purposely pay back to Hennessy. And unless the ball went to Maya, who always looked to go forward, which I love about where he plays, but if it went to either the fullbacks or the centre half, they always went back to Hennessy, and he put a lot of pressure on us, I thought, unnecessarily. I mean, obviously that one time when the ball bobbled off of Hennessy and went off for a corner kick, but I always seem to see when Hennessy's back there, that is always the default fullback. Let's kick it back to Hennessy and he'll clear it. And I wish he'd be a little bit more forward thinking, especially with Meyer in the game, because a player like Meyer, and again, I've mentioned for Schlupp, when he gets the ball, he'll drive forward. I think we're better on the front foot from that when we have the ball, obviously, as opposed to, you know, always looking in the back four, looking to play ball back 20, 30 yards to our goalkeeper.
Yeah, I mean, what I would say about that is Martin Kelly, Joe Ward are not footballing footballers. I mean, that's a ridiculous comment in that they're paid a fortune. They clearly are very, very good footballers. But, you know, we're used to week in, week out seeing Sacco and Aaron Wan-Bissaka, who are very, very gifted players. So to an extent, you know, they're keen to not make a mistake on the few chances that they do get to play. So I can kind of understand it. But what I can't understand is why they'd put Hennessy under that kind of pressure when they knew that the striker, who had, let's just take a minute to mention his haircut. For a start, the man bun is very much gone out of fashion, and I'm glad it has. But he kind of had a man bun and a kind of receding hairline at the same time, and I found that very disconcerting. So I'm not surprised that Hennessy saw him in his eye line and got a bit scared. But if we go on to, there's been a comment from Heskiff of the preview pod of this very parish, and he has asked why Wayne Hennessy cannot control the football even when he's under zero pressure. And obviously that's a bit tongue in cheek, but there was a few points when he was passed the ball back, and you just think, what the hell are you doing? Like you mentioned about him having bets, he must have had a couple of bets on corners, because a couple he put out totally unnecessarily. And it can't have just been because they decided to pass back to him, because he is a goalkeeper and that is one of about three things that he should be doing. So what do you think it was, Chris?
Confidence, as usual. I mean, he's such a frustrating player to watch because we all know that he has a really good save in him. And actually, the highlights reel that has come out since doesn't really show a real... I thought it was a really good shot in the first half. Now, I mean, it took place at the far end of the stadium from where I was stood singing at the time. But it looked like a really fantastic reaction save where he was going a different direction and then had to lift his arm up in order to stop the ball. I don't know if any of you remember that from live action, but that's what he's good at. That's what he brings. The downside, of course, is, you know, I mean, his distribution, he gets a lot of distance on the ball, but it's mainly when the ball is played to him and the way that he just does not react in a way that inspires confidence. And you can see, I was mystified by the fact that they kept playing the ball backwards rather than going to the midfield, especially seeing as we were playing quite deep. You know, there were options to pass the ball forward, and why they didn't take them, I cannot say. You know, and I think that hopefully is an indication of what will happen in league games, that we won't be starting with that you know, defensive partnership, because it's just, while some people have said Dan is ready to start, not if he's playing like that, in my opinion, in terms of the distribution. Now, I'm sure that he was following instructions, but no, not for me.
Well, we'll come on to Dan in a minute. I know Nick wanted to talk about playing deep, but just before that, I do want to talk about that save. You're talking about the one that kind of moved in the air and then he parried down. Is that the one you're talking about?
Was it one-handed or was it two hands?
The two-handed one.
It was two hands. Okay.
He parried one down, and actually it was incredibly close to just falling to the front man.
There are some dreadful parries. I mean, there always are. That's his weak point, isn't it? But the one I'm thinking of, I think, was different. Maybe I'm just misremembering it, because to be fair, it was at the far end of the pitch. But it looked a really good save to me. I mean, Patrick's the goalkeeping expert, so you know, maybe he'll jump in and confirm that I've remembered correctly, or say that I'm hallucinating. But talk about the one that with the parrying, because that was a usual Hennessy special, apart from the shuffle.
Well,
really.
I mean, in fairness to him, the ball did bobble in the air. But I would have said, to me, that was probably the closest point they had to scoring, because their front man, and forgive me, I can't remember which one it was that was there, he was totally unmarked on the edge of the six-yard box. And if it hadn't parried like 2 foot to the right of him, you know, give the benefit of the doubt to Hennessy, he may well have planned that, but... I can't imagine that he had the skill to push it to that exact angle. We were really lucky there. Patrick,
Mike, you said the ball bobbled in the air in front of him. How does that happen?
It sort of moved in the air.
Okay.
No bobbling. Sorry, but Patrick, as the resident goalkeeping expert, talk us through it.
Yeah, I'm not going to come across as an expert. I would give Terence that moniker, but. It's just, as Chris mentioned, it's just something that Hennessy seems to do. He seems to parry a lot of shots right back as opposed to the side. Don't know if that's coaching or if that's just the way he reacts. I think one of his strengths actually is his reactions. He doesn't like to think when he does things. He prefers to do things reactionary, which is why he'll make some very decent saves from distance. But again, on that one, Mike, you are correct. The ball did, it moved in the air. You know, that's why these balls nowadays do that. So I can't blame him for that as much, but it just, again, he just seems to have that habit of parrying balls back into play. And as you rightly said, had he parried it another yard or so in the direction of the forward, I think it was Marquise, it might not have been Marquise, they would have scored. So I think something he has to work on. And again, I don't know if he's been taught that a long time ago or if that's just the way he is. But again, I have coached keepers, obviously, at youth level over here, and I always teach them to parry the ball to the side. But again, it's difficult for ball bobbles, though, to honestly say that he could have parried that one anywhere but where he actually did it.
Yeah, and I mean, we've had a fair amount of criticism, people saying they'll never listen to us again and stuff because we are on Hennessy's case. And, I say from the when Goethe conceded the penalty the other day, we probably didn't give it as much discussion as this. So I appreciate people that want to stick up for Wayne. And somebody did say that he was their player of the match on Twitter, which I was not in agreement with, but you know, fair enough. There are people that thought he had a decent game, and they probably know a lot more about goalkeeping than me. So let's talk a bit about defending deep, Nick, because I know this is a bit of a bee in your bonnet that you wanted to have a discussion about. So what were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, as I said a little bit earlier, it's if you're going to play that way, you've got to be darn sure that you're not going to misplace passes. And I don't know what everybody's pass percentage was like. I had it in my head that PVA made loads of missed passes, but I saw some data earlier that says he didn't. I think it might have been Patrick. So it's all down to perception, but we get punished by a decent team if we're messing about in that part of the pitch. It's good if you're going to think, right, let's draw them forward and then we can break quickly. But I don't know, maybe it was just because it was so comfortable for us yesterday that we were able to do it a bit more, but I wouldn't like to see it too often.
To jump in, Nick, yeah, PVA's pass success rate yesterday was 91%, and that's off of 52 passes.
Really?
50, yeah, so he actually did pass, but I've been on him all season about how poor I think he's been passing the ball, but yesterday he actually passed the ball very, very well.
Well, I mean, I know that Hambo always has a rant about these stats, and I'd say from what I remember about PVA yesterday, a lot of it was passing square under little pressure, so I'm not that surprised. I think, if I remember the stats you posted, Milivojevic had a success rate of 88 or something, and now his balls were, you know, much more menacing, and I think that represents quite a bit more. I didn't have a great deal of discussion for PVA in the show notes, but it's probably worth bringing him up because he's been at the centre of attention the last few games. What did people think of him? What did you think, Chris?
Well, he had obviously some key... I mean, he had a role in the second goal, didn't he? In that it was him who broke forward and crossed the ball from the left across for Townsend to head it back across the goal for Meyer to... head in. So, you know, I mean, I thought he had a good game. He was mobile, but then it wasn't challenging opposition. He wasn't under a huge amount of pressure. So, you know, it would be very hard to extrapolate from that to say, oh, he's got his form back or anything like that. And equally, I mean, I recall a couple of moments where someone like Joel Ward actually was starting to show little tricks. Like, I don't know if that was apparent on the telly, the back heel that he had coming out of defence, moving forward.
That's
into
Sacco
midfield.
That's Sacco has made him do that. He's trying to be like Sacco.
Yeah, well, I was thinking maybe he was emulating Wan-Bissaka, trying to get his place back. I don't know.
Joel Ward is trying to look like Wan-Bissaka and Sacco. Okay, that is that is a sobering thought. I personally thought that PVA had another decent game. Without being tested that much, it meant that he was able to get forward a little bit. He probably still didn't have the kind of earth-shattering impact that he has had in the past. When you see, you know, he comes across as one of the players of the game, but I thought he was solid enough. Another player who I thought was solid enough but has come in for some criticism was Jordan Ayew. And there is a comment here from John Ferendo Kumbo. And I'm not sure if that is your real name, John, but if it is, kudos. How bad is Jordan Ayew really? I thought he was all right yesterday, and I think he's been playing in the games that Wilf's not been playing, he's been covering fairly well, but I realise that is an opinion that is quite divisive.
I thought he filled in for Wilf well, and his best performances have been when he's been played out on that to the left of the striker, because we've got to remember that's his position. He went on some good runs, but made a couple of poor decisions, and that's all that let him down. But it definitely had an impact on the game, and he definitely got involved. It was, like I said, he had a shot where he should have crossed it, but then Batshuayi did that a bit as well. So, you know, I think he filled in well. That's his best position.
I agree with Nick, and you know, it's easy to get on Jordan Ayew, but a couple of things I'll note. He's not Wolf Zaha, so people looking for him or Townsend, looking for him to take on play. That's really not his strong suit. I've seen him in the past play. I think he's more of a 4-4-2 forward sitting behind the main striker. He can take on a player, but he's better suited to be, you know, kind of hanging outside the box, get shots off. Remember the goal he scored against us last year for Swansea. In addition, if you guys noticed yesterday, Mike made a great stat about the amount of Doncaster Rovers' corners. Well, about 10 of those are cleared by Jordan Ayew. Watch the game again. He makes about 5 or 6 clearing headers. He works his socks off. So statistically, he might have played great as far as assists or goal. But I thought yesterday he worked really hard on that up front on that left side. I thought he, again, his work rate was excellent. I think defensively played really, really well for us yesterday.
Yeah, that's a good point. The only thing I would say about that is that all of their corners didn't seem to hit the first, only seemed to hit the first man, and he was the first man. I think it was a bit of the fact that they were pretty terrible. So we've discussed Dan a little bit already, but James Howard has asked whether Dan's ready for regular first team places. So I heard on our illustrious other podcast, FYP, them say that he's still in a kind of training regime that isn't 100%, so they can't see him making his way back into the first team immediately. And you've mentioned, I can't remember which one of you it was, that his passing was a little misplaced, but I thought his defensive work, especially his heading, mastering the defence, and then his threat up for corners and set pieces was really impressive. And I thought it negated the downsides to his game. I don't know what the rest of you thought about that. I think he was worthy to be put in the man of the match suggestions, although I didn't think he should have won it. But I was surprised. I was really impressed with him. And there was a couple of balls in. You just knew he was going to be the head that got him out there. And when he did head it out, he tended to put it to safety, you know, a decent head on it. I just thought he had a really, really solid game. And it's what you expect from a defender that's essentially the second choice centre-back.
I would agree. He's a solid player. He doesn't let you down, and he didn't let us down yesterday. He had a decent game. A few misplaced passes, as I've said. And you know, I mean, the thing is, I'm really clear that, you know, for me, he's not in our top two centre backs now. You know, clearly for me, you start Sacco, and then you on top of that, you obviously go with Tompkins, but Tompkins can get injured. This happens. And then you've got Dan and Kelly. And for me, they're much of a muchness now. Kelly has risen in terms of his solidity. He's demonstrated that he can form an effective partnership with, you know, the other centre backs we've got. Dan can do that too if he's fit. So I'm not worried about that. But, you know, for me, he's just nowhere near, you know, the standard of the other two in terms of the regular partnership that they've already got. I mean, I've look forward to someone disagreeing though, if there is.
Well, I'm just going to play devil's advocate and say, you know, he's getting on; those grey hairs are starting to come through. And for a 31-year-old man, it's quite a lot of grey hair. But will he want to take that position going forward? But you know, he's a really solid defender, and I would have thought he'd have his eye on, you know, playing week in, week out. So would he want to stay as a sort of, as a backup in probably the fourth choice of four? Because I'm not convinced he would, although I do know he's on serious money. So, you know, it might be hard for someone else to want to pay that amount of money for him. But if I was him, I'd probably want more game time.
Yeah, I'm a big Scott Dan fan, Mike, but like you, I think that the money that he's on and the opportunities that he will have going forward, I'm sure he'll be gone next year because, again, he is fourth in the pecking order. I'd like to see Sam Woods, as an example, get a try as maybe the fourth centre-half next year. And, again, I can see Dan going to a newly promoted side or maybe like a Cardiff if they stay up next year because he's not going to be necessarily – he's not a top 10 centre-half anymore, but he's definitely a guy who can do a job for you. So, again, big fan of Scott Dan, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him leave next year.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Parrish is all about the money to an extent, and he'll see that leave it another season, you know, his value is going to drop down more and more. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him go, but that would be depressing because he really did impress yesterday.
Well, it's the first time in ages that Everton haven't made a bid for him, isn't it? So I always thought he'd go there from us, being a scouse lad and all that.
Yeah, when you look at Silva, you don't really think, you know, when you're thinking of players that he would want, you know, his sort of dynamic, charismatic play, you don't really think Scott Dan, do you?
Yeah, I suppose so. But he just seemed to be infernally linked to him for about 4 years on the trot, didn't he?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Well, we'll see. If he goes off to Everton, you can pick my lottery numbers right. For the week after that happens. That would be excellent. Okay, so if we move on, let's talk about a man who has been discussed plenty recently and he keeps on delivering, Jeffrey Slupp. And Terence, again, of this very parish, has asked a question. Now, you've got to brace yourself for this, gentlemen. You've got to think on your feet because you probably haven't seen this yet. He's asked, has Jeffrey Schlupp's move into the middle solved the Ruben Loftus-Cheek solution? Now, first of all, tell me what he means by that or what you think he means, and then tell me whether you think he has. Patrick.
I wouldn't compare him to Ruben Loftus-Cheek for obvious reasons, but I will say this. The way that Hodgson likes to play in that 4-3-3, Jeffrey Schlupp is probably the absolutely perfect player for him. And I'll give you the reasons why. It's his ability to attack. He's decent in a tackle. He drives the ball forward. Another perfect example was yesterday. He made a run from the halfway line and scored a really, really well-taken goal. That was a Will for Andros. We'd be going crazy about it. So, again, Schlupp doesn't get like as much credit as he probably shouldn't. Again, I'm not going to say I was a big fan of his beginning of the season because I wasn't. I know Chris was, and credit to him. But I've got to give him credit. He's really done a great job. And, again, he's not Ruben Loftus-Cheek, but because we play a 4-4-3, the way we like to play a little narrow inside, Schlupp really has taken to that position. And to his credit, because he came up as a forward and dropped back to left back, etc. So I've got to give him credit. And the way that Roy likes to play, Schlupp has really owned that position. And with Luka next to him, and for me personally, hopefully Max as a third, I think that could be a very effective midfield three going forward.
You can tell he's been both attack and defence because he made a couple of crucial tackles yesterday, I thought. And his speed is faster than what we give him credit for, I think.
He's a very adaptable player. Oh, sorry, Mike. Yeah, he's a very adaptable player. And, he can play in all those different positions. He's got the speed. He's got the shot. He's got the tackling ability. He's also got a misplaced pass in him. And that's the one thing that he probably needs to work on a little bit. But I love the fact that he looks forward. He plays forward. And, you can see that he tries really, really hard. And the difference is that, compared to some other players we've got who try hard and it often doesn't come off, more often than not, it seems to at the moment. And long may that continue.
Well, I think that the word you've all used there is forward. And maybe that does answer Terence's question because, we're all crying out for the sort of the runs, the purposeful runs that Ruben Loftus-Cheek offered last season. So, maybe he is the answer. But I think it's interesting what Patrick brought up about him playing with Max in a three because there's been plenty of discussion about whether Max Meyer can operate, how he's going to operate, what formation would suit him, if there's any formation that we play that suits him. Does Schlupp pick up the extra defensive duties that maybe you'd have to sacrifice if you had Max in a front in a free?
He does for me. Just watching yesterday, I just like the way the three operate. I took a quick look on whoscored.com to see Max's position on the field, and he was basically central the entire match, basically behind Batshuayi. So I'm imagining, having him there than having Wilf to one side and Andros. I think this really works. I really think it works really well because, again, if Max is that high and is supporting those two, and you've got those other two players wide, you've got a great opportunity now to create over more opportunities for either Batshuayi or Benteke. So I think that it could work. The unfortunate part is that Kiate misses out, and I like him a lot as a player. I thought he did really well yesterday. He came on. He made one lung-busting defensive run to cut off a play, and he is a tall, languid, but good on the ball and strong player. I feel bad for him to miss out, but I'm saying it now. I think that Max with Schlupp and Luca makes a very good front three, as long as you can, you got that solid back four behind you. And I think it's time that Roy give that a chance in the Premier League.
That's a really good point. And you just brought up Kouyaté's run. I mean, my God, it was
fantastic.
I had no idea he was that quick.
Exactly.
And, you know, if Dan is going to go and there isn't a place for him defensive midfield, then he can play defence as well. So, you know, he's a versatile player, and for 8 million, an absolute bargain. If we go back to Max, Chris Phillips has asked, well, he said, I was hoping to see more drive and passion from Max yesterday, like a player who wants to play for 90 minutes. I know he scored, but it was Doncaster. I was looking for more desire. You know, I think for just a answer the point about it being Doncaster. I think we took them for granted a little bit. Some fans, you know, saying it was League One and that kind of thing. They're on a terrific run, and they are a very attacking, creative, fluid team. It's just that we happen to play very well against those kind of teams. It's when you do a Grimsby and have 10 men for 88 minutes and stick behind the ball is when we had a problem. But I felt like I did see plenty of passing from Mayer. And I was pleasantly surprised that he created quite as much as he did. I would have said that everyone had a fairly quiet second half, but in the first half he was everywhere. And this is the first time I've really seen him, you know, play to his strengths without Zaha, because they seem to link up excellently together. And I was a bit dubious about whether he'd be able to do that without Wilf playing, but I felt like he did personally.
Yeah, you know, that's a bit of an unfair comment by that person, but I don't want to really go into that. But again, I'm a stats person, so I'll throw some things out that kind of might disprove what that person just said. Max had 42 total passes, 83% passing success rate. He had 59 touches, four of those in your opposition's box. He had 10 forward passes out of his 42, and he won 6 out of 8 duels. So not only was he effective going forward, he's very effective defensively. People I've often said, because of his size, well, he's not good defensively. But look, we watch again. Everyone has an access to it. I have access to it. I can watch the game as many times as I want. I watched it again this morning. I thought he played really well overall. And again, to put down Doncaster as an opponent, I think it's a bit unfair, because we all know how we're doing in the league. And again, that's a tricky thing to go to a lower division side away from home and come up with a professional job as a 2-0 win. But I thought Max really did well. I don't know what that person wanted. When he scored the goal, he was very happy. When he scored the goal, he went over his teammates. He was giving Andros a hug. So I don't know what people want to see from him. Maybe a couple of back tips and they'll be happy.
Patrick, you said 59 passes, 59 touches for Max.
Correct.
How's that compare with other players? Because he was on for just over an hour. That's touching the ball once a minute.
No, he played the whole match. Max didn't
So it's less than once a minute. How involved is that compared to other players?
Give me a second, I'll look it up.
Cool.
Okay, we'll come back to that in a second. I think the thing that got most people going was discussion about the forwards. And if we take Richard Evans and Mark Drew, they both made pretty much the same point. Richard said, could we try having Benteke and Batman on the pitch at the same time? And Mark just said, must try them. So how would people think about how what we've just discussed with having three midfielders would work with having them both on the pitch? And how do you think they performed? What do you reckon, Chris?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I don't think it works with that particular formation that we've just described. But I do think it's worth a go. I don't think it's necessarily how you start a game. It might be one where, you know, you start with one of them up top And then depending if it's still 0-0 after an hour, that's where you bring the second player on and, you know, give it a good go. If it looks like it's worked after that, then maybe you roll it on. But for me, I just think it going 4-4-2 with those two strikers is quite a bold call. You know, especially in at the moment we're 3 points above the relegation zone. Yes, that's, you know, we've got some winnable games coming up. You can't afford to be gambling and messing about with what is quite a well-established tactical plan now, especially now that we've got some variations in it. For me, you know, you stick with the system we've got, but if it's not working after an hour, then that's where you change it up and give it a go.
So I've got the stats very quickly. Luka had 96 touches, Schlupp had 60, Ayew 48, Townsend 53, and Batshuayi 24. So I would say that he was very effective in what he did as far as touches are concerned based on that.
Well, cheers.
Batshuayi 24 brings us on to, I think, a couple of tongue-in-cheek comments. Andy Sparrow, are we in danger of wasting a valuable asset like Batshuayi? Thought he looked a bit lost yesterday and offered a little more than Benteke. And Chris Chantry, very tongue-in-cheek, how long would it take our coaches to turn Ronaldo and Messi into Calvin Andrew and Alan Lee in regards to Batshuayi missing a couple of chances in the last two games?
So that's unfair.
Just go back to the formation before we discuss Batshuayi. 4-4-2 with those two, I just can't ever see happening unless Zaha's out. You know, you'd be relying on two in midfield basically controlling it. So I guess you'd go Luka and one other, Andros on the right, Zaha on the left. He'd end up defending three quarters of the time. So I'm not sure that there'd be that much service to Batshuayi and Benteke in the first place. So I'm not sure that there's going to be any situation where Hodgson's going to go for that. He's a conservative man. He's going to stick, like Chris said, he's going to stick with what he knows. I just can't see a situation where Wilf's going to be left of a four. That's very much an abandoned thing now. It hasn't happened in a long time. So, yeah, as much as it would be great to see them both on the pitch, I think you're right. This would be 60 minutes for one, 30 minutes for the other. And now that Wickham's injured yet again, that makes the choices a little bit easier for him as well. Yeah, Batshuayi, 24 touches. How do people think he did yesterday? I thought he was a bit sort of frozen out of the game for long periods, but it didn't seem like Palace missed him that much.
Yeah, it wasn't the kind of match I would think he'd ever would have had a lot of success in. Forget opposition for just a second. You know, 24 touches, he just wasn't involved in the game. I felt badly for him. As I watched the game, I felt badly for him. He just wasn't getting involved. He did have a header first half that was blocked / saved. He had obviously that chance up front when he made that really poor second touch that Goldie was able to catch up, and he kind of poked it and saved it and almost went up for a corner. But I'm going to go back to a comment I've made before about the way Hodgson plays, and it's just the fact that I just think all strikers will struggle in his system. And I've got, again, I hate to do this, you know, this whole stats thing, but I did a quick research on the strikers I played under Hodgson when he's been in the Premier League. Andy Johnson scored 7 goals for Fulham back in 2008-2009. Peter Odemwingie scored 10 goals for him for West Brom 2011-12. And Bobby Zamora scored 8 for him when he played for Fulham in his second season there. I would have done a little bit more research for us, compare that to other strikers of similar teams, etc. But I just feel that strikers are going to struggle with the way that, you know, under the way he plays. Now, we do create chances, which is great. We do have good wide players in Zaha and Townsend, and perhaps that this changes. But I'm not sure. And again, I with you, Mike, I don't think 4-4-3 would work at all under, well, I don't think I was going to play 4-4-2 unless we were trailing a game by 2-3 goals and chasing it. But I think the 4-3-3 is going to be difficult for a striker to really be successful unless we just bombing crosses, or we do really get better at set plays and maybe corner kicks and free kicks where they score a lot of goals from, because the way that is set up to be, it just isn't set up for a striker to really thrive. It's more for midfielders and player, honestly, like a Jeffrey Schlupp, to get a lot of goals.
There's no need to apologise for only coming up with those three stats. You only need the one, really. AJ, 7 goals. I mean, assuming he's taking the penalties as well, you know, that is...
Exactly, isn't it? Amazing, huh?
That's damning, that is. Yeah, I mean, Benteke coming on didn't make a great deal of difference. I think that so that proves your point as well. But I really don't think that it's a massive issue at the moment. I think we're doing fine. We're scoring goals without them. You know, they're there. They hold up play. Let's not forget Batshuayi's one of his first touches when he came on the first game and set up that incredible goal. I'm sure his time will come. I'm not sure he's going to end up with incredible stats, but I think Palace fans will warm to him possibly more than they are to Benteke this season. So I wouldn't worry too much, people. That's my positivity for this particular question. One other thing people wanted to bring up generally is the amount of forward moves, and you said that there wasn't a great deal of fast-moving counter-attacking play, which surprised me a little bit. I expected a lot more of it. Do you think there's any reason that happened, or was it just, you know, the players were kind of playing second and third gear by the time the second half came? Because, you know, you can look to the point that maybe Mayer should be creating more of those chances for them. You know, Batshuayi's got pace. Maybe a few more things should have come his way from slightly further out. It's tough to say, though, against Doncaster, isn't it?
We just kind of coasted, didn't we? Why put in a lot of effort when you've got big games coming up? It's, you know, we're halfway through a tough old season. As Lucas said in his post-match yesterday, the Premier League is more important. So why go all out, hell for leather, and possibly get injured or, you know, cause something to go bad for the rest of the season if that happens? So, yeah, it was comfortable. And I think we could have stepped up a gear anyway, don't you? We weren't exactly going full throttle.
I totally agree.
If you don't have to?
Yeah, I think we'd probably leave that there. I think that's exactly what happened, and I don't think we should read too much into it. So let's move on to the last couple of questions. Chris wanted to discuss whether, after Roy saying that he thought the Premier League was the priority, is he right? And then Jacqueline and Hart said, next round, this team's got us this far. Do you think they should be the team playing? I think that's a very reasonable question. So let's address those 2 points, gents. Chris, what's your thoughts on those?
Well, very simply, I mean, clearly the Premier League is very, very important to the long-term well-being of our club. But we're now not talking about a situation where we're talking about two-legged ties and game after game. We're talking about if we win our next game, then we're at Wembley. And if we win the game after that, we're in the final. And if we win the game after that, we've won the cup. So we're not at a stage, for me, where this is even a debate anymore. We play our full-strength team in any FA Cup game we've got left between now and the end of the season, and we try and win the cup. We also try and do as well as we can in the league. It's just a false choice for me. So even to imply that there's a choice to be made there, no, I don't think so. I was slightly annoyed that it was said, but at the same time, you know, I mean, I don't think it will truly make a difference. I don't think it's time now to be worrying about who you play. You play the best team you got, whoever we're playing against.
Yeah, we're not a top side, so we don't have the squad depth of a Man City going for 4 trophies. But at this point, I'm with Chris. You've got to play your strongest side going forward. The Premier League is the Premier League. We're going to do our best, obviously, to stay up. That's not even a question, but Chris nailed it. We are so close. My only thing is this, is who we join the next round, because it throws up so many possibilities. If we draw Swansea, for instance, we've got to play our best side to get to the semi-final. We draw Millwall or Brighton. Anybody want to see us lose to those two sides, honestly, with a weakened side?
Can I just jump in there and point out that we have timed this podcast recording terribly, so that pretty much not that long after we finish the pod, then they'll decide who the draw is. So assuming that anyone listening to this is going to already know who we're playing. So apologies for that. That's purely down to our terrible timing.
Good point. So continue my point. I mean, so to me, you've got to go with your strongest side. Now, again, I heard in the post-match, the manager mentioned playing Hennessy in the next round. I'm not for that at all. Does he remember that he played Sprony in the first two rounds? It's got to be Guaita and everybody else for it. Because again, yeah, our history is not great against the Man Cities and the Man Knights of the world as far as in the cups, but we're so close. We have to go for this. And again, I'm not having a weakened side going out in the next round because we're trying to rest up for whoever we play in the next match after that. No, we've got to go for this.
as fans, we want to actually bloody win something for once. I'm sure we're all agreed on that. However, yes, thank you.
Zenith Systems Cup, mate.
He opens it up to me. It's not the ZDS Cup, my friend. What you like to brag about?
Yeah, yeah. When Jeff went up to collect that, I was there. But the cost of the money you lose for being in the Premier League is phenomenal. I think you get more for coming bottom of the Premier League than you do for winning the FA Cup. So, yes, as fans, we do want that trophy and that trophy cabinet. And you'd hope it's something that the players would want. But it's for Palace as a business, the Premier League has to trump the Cup. That's not to say I don't think we shouldn't try and play our strongest team. I predict Man City away, by the way.
Joy. Oh, no. Great. Well, let's hope that we're already celebrating having not got them in the next round by the time people listen to this on their commute. And I just want to clarify that our comrade Chris there meant that he was annoyed about the comment from Roy, not about from you, Jacqueline, because that was a very good question.
Yes, absolutely.
And I would like to thank everyone for getting in touch. It's got to the point now where we can't read everyone out, but we do read them all and we think about them as we create our show plans. So it's really appreciated and any interaction is something welcome. So keep on with sending them over in future. Okay, so let's wrap it up there. Hoping that tomorrow morning you're smiling because we've drawn Millwall away. I know Patrick doesn't want that, but I certainly do. It's been a while since I've had Millwall away. That would be absolutely lovely, but otherwise just not one of the Manchester teams would be great. It looks like Manchester United might be going through at this point. Thanks a lot for listening. You've got the preview pod coming this Thursday. You've got Love Sport tomorrow. Nick, do you know who's on?
Me and DR. I've been avoiding Chris. I'm only going on anything when Chris isn't there. Have you noticed?
Okay, well, I'm joining Chris on a long car ride to Leicester at the weekend, which will be a joy in his lovely car. So that will be good. So we will be coming back to you with the review show for that on Sunday as well. But in the meantime, thanks a lot for listening and up Palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.